Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Smell Podcast. I'm your host, Katie Boateng. Happy 100 episodes of the podcast. I'm beyond excited to have hit this milestone with all of you, and here's to 100 more episodes. This week, please join me in listening to a conversation with Mimi Ellis, a recovering anosmic who currently lives in Atlanta, Georgia. We talk about her experiences dealing with a smell disorder, her work as a physician's assistant in an ear, nose, and throat clinic, the importance of nutrition and eating while dealing with a smell disorder, how she decided to start her business called Getting Well When You Can't Smell, and much more. Our interview was recorded this month, January 2022. Let's listen to the interview. Hi, Mimi. Welcome to the Smell Podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, thanks. How are you?
I'm doing really well. I'm excited to speak with you today. So to get started, can you let us all know a little bit more about yourself? For example, who are you and what do you do?
Excellent. Well, I'm super excited to be here. So who am I? I am a, probably most importantly, somebody who is about 4.5 years into recovering from post-viral anosmia. And ironically, I am also a physician assistant and have been working in ear, nose, and throat for the past 8 years. So I've treated lots of patients with this condition and often would just about be crying in the exam room with them, thinking about how upset I'd be if this ever happened to me. And then it did. And here we are.
Yeah, no, I know. I can imagine exactly what that must have been like and the irony of it, seeing that you do actually work in an ear, nose, and throat setting. So where are you from and where do you currently live?
So I grew up in Long Island, and both of my parents immigrated from France. So I lived there till the end of high school, and then mostly I've been in Atlanta since then, minus a 14-year detour to Phoenix for PA school.
Nice. So you mentioned that you lost your sense of smell due to post-viral loss. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little bit more? What is a little bit more about your anosmia story? So what is your anosmia story? What exactly happened?
Well, so before this, I was, I always joke that, you know, I could smell better than a bloodhound. I was one of those people with an extraordinarily sensitive sense of smell, and I really enjoyed that. And being of French background, obviously, everything revolves around food and cooking and meals and enjoyment of nice perfume and all of those things. And basically what happened was in the spring, I got a bad sinus infection and got over the sinus infection and was okay. And then a couple little things happened. I was having some family over for dinner and I had cooked something that I had made many times before and was sitting there eating it thinking, you know, what did I do? I didn't season this right. Something's not right. And I kept asking everybody, you know, does this taste good to you? And they kept reassuring me, yeah, it's great. It's great. And I'm sitting there going, something's wrong. I'm not tasting it. And I didn't really think about it. I just figured they were just being polite. And then the next morning I woke up. Normally when I would first open my eyes, I would smell coffee because my husband would be up before me and he would have made it. And I would get that happy, it's going to be a great day feeling when I smelled it. And I opened my eyes and didn't smell it and thought, okay, this is strange. So I came out to the kitchen convinced that he was just doing something different that morning. And to my horror, I looked down and saw a freshly hot or freshly brewed pot of hot coffee. And then started to think, oh, I'm not smelling. This isn't good. And then I got the can of coffee and stuck as much of my face as I could get in there and tried to smell it. And there was just nothing.
That's so frustrating and overwhelming, that moment when you actually realize that you are not experiencing smell anymore. For me, it was pretty gradual, but for you, it sounds like it was pretty immediate that you woke up and realized that something was different. Yeah. And You're talking about how you were raised and having French parents and how food was a really big part of your life. So I know that you are a big foodie. And so when this happened to you, how did this impact your relationship with food and eating?
Big time. I mean, my first reaction was I was really angry. This is a hugely selfish thought, but I just kept thinking this wasn't supposed to happen to me, you know, not the foodie, not the person that treats other people for this. And I was super angry. And the first thing I did when I came home from work was I'm the one that cooks in my house. So I told my husband and my daughter that I wasn't going to cook anymore because it just felt like it would be too painful for me to cook and just not have the same experience. I didn't think I could do it. So I put all my cookbooks in a big box along with my nice perfume and everybody else's nice perfume. And I put them in a box and threw it in the garage.
How do you think having your background in the ENT field impacted when you became anosmic? Meaning, for example, do you feel like you were better prepared to know what to do, or did you still just feel completely lost?
Well, a little bit of both. I felt somewhat lost because back, you know, this is 4.5 years ago, there just wasn't a lot. There wasn't a lot of science, and the science that was out there was not well distributed through the academy of, our specialty academy that we learn through and do our continuing education through. So I wasn't able to find very many people with answers. On the flip side of that, my experience having a daughter with a disability that led her to swimming with a pre-Paralympic adaptive sports program allowed me to meet people that literally, you know, were told you're never going to walk and talk again. I met parents that had children that were fully functioning, you know, contributing members of society that had been told, you know, that their child would never walk or talk or be able to do normal things. And here I was looking at these kids, you know, competitively swimming, doing well academically, going off to college. So I just kind of scratched my head and said, you know, if that's possible, then there's got to be something about neuroplasticity that allows us to heal our sense of smell. So I just kept digging and digging and digging until I found a little bit of research, and I found Chrissy Kelly in England, who was doing some trainings, teaching people how to do olfactory retraining. And I got with her as quickly as I could.
Yeah, Chrissy and Absent are such a great resource for people that come up time and time again. So if those of you who are listening haven't checked out Absent yet, make sure that you do that. So after you became anosmic in the beginning, you kind of dived in and were looking for research, learned a little bit more about olfactory training. And then what happened next? So I know now, for example, you run a program or you run a site, which is called lostsmellgetwell.com. So how did you end up there? Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, well, so the recovery process, as you know, is really gradual and unpredictable. And I was okay with that. I did a good bit of training in mindfulness based stress reduction a few years before, which I think really helped prepare me to navigate the up and down nature of all this. And having a nutrition background, I was able to figure out, one, what did I need nutritionally to get well? And two, how to get something on a plate that I was actually interested in eating. And that was not obviously, you know, a quick and easy thing, but I think having had those skills helped me figure it out and put it into action. And long story short, it gradually got better. And early in the pandemic, I had taken 5 weeks off from work because I have some lung issues. And of course, being an ENT, we're the highest risk specialty, being that we deal with the airway all day long. So I chose to take 5 weeks out of the practice until we had enough PPE and protocols and all of that. And I was just laying there one night, and it was kind of funny. One of the girls in my office had started making YouTube videos. So I was late at night watching one of her videos. And she, I don't even remember what she was talking about, but she kept saying, "I don't know, I don't know, I don't know." And I kind of chuckled and said, "Of course you don't know, you're only 23. And then I thought, okay, I'm 53, what do I know? And what do I know that maybe not everybody else knows that would be valuable to share with the world? And it just came to me right in that moment at about 11 o'clock at night that I had gotten pretty proficient at cooking, eating, and living well when you can't smell. So that's when this whole journey started. And I was literally up till about 4 a.m. just jotting ideas down, trying to figure out how I could take what I had learned from a painful experience and put it out there into the world and help others that might benefit.
Yeah, that's fantastic. It's always nice when you have like that moment of clarity or that moment of creativity and you just kind of go frantic with writing things down. I've been there before too. So can you tell us a little bit more about LostSmellGetWell.com? So what do you do with that? So what can patients find there or people who are interested in learning more about it? What does it cover and what kind of services do you offer to those who have olfactory disorders?
Well, it's definitely something that's evolving. And right now it's basically my mission is to help people meet their health goals in the face of having smell loss, which, as you probably know, is really difficult. And what happens when people have smell loss as far as nutrition is typically they end up either eating too much and gaining weight, and the eating too much usually consists of things that are really high in fat and salt and sugar and things that we don't necessarily want to make the base of our diet. Or typically people with bad distortions, which you and I know as parosmia, oftentimes they just are not able to eat and then they will become malnourished. And a lot of times there's significant weight loss. Yeah, and just not getting the nutrients they need, which ultimately I think impacts their healing from the smell loss as well, although we don't have a whole lot of research around that yet. So my goal is to provide people a way to bridge that gap and help them, whatever their particular needs are, figure out how to get the nutrition they need. With somebody who's got bad parosmia, obviously, you know, it's survival first, and helping them figure out how to just get the nutrition in. And then once we can get past the survival point, it's helping them figure out how to enjoy food again, but also enjoy it in a way that is in line with their other health goals.
Yeah, I can attest as someone who's had anosmia now for over a decade that my nutrition really struggles. I gravitate towards certain foods that are like more satisfying to me since I don't have a great sense of flavor. So that's something that I am in a constant, I don't know if the word is battle, but constantly trying to do better at being mindful about what kind of meals I'm making and what kind of food I'm ingesting, because I can easily, if I get busy or overwhelmed, lapse back into my habits of crackers and chips and things that are crunchy and more satisfying to me than being more aware and saying like, okay, but have you eaten a vegetable today?
Right.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So how would you, speaking of smell, it's been about 4.5 years for you now. I know it's very subjective, but how would you rate your ability to smell now?
Good question. And it is subjective. And interestingly, a couple of years before I lost my sense of smell, I actually did one of the UPSIT tests. That's the
nice.
For the UPenn, their smell test, just because I wanted to know how to administer it. And I scored almost 100%. I think I missed one, and it was something that I had just never smelled before. So I knew what my baseline was.
Wow.
I retested it, but if I had to guess, I would say in terms of how sensitive it is, it's probably 25% or so of how sensitive it was. But being that it was just off the chart sensitive before, 25% is actually pretty livable. And the accuracy, I would say, is almost 100%.
It's that's pretty good. So yeah. You're able to perceive smells.
Yes. And I can tell what they are. It's pretty rare that I have any of the distorted smells anymore.
That's good. So speaking of that, when smell does come up for you in your day-to-day life, now that you're 4.5 years into dealing with this, do you take the time to explain to people that you have a diminished sense of smell?
Yeah, oftentimes I do, especially if they see me reaching for the salt shaker. it's a hard question to answer because at this point, everybody in my immediate sphere knows, and I tend to just be very outward with, you know, if I'm suffering about something, I want everybody to know and suffer with me. So most of the people that I'm with on a regular basis already know about it. I don't often explain it to strangers necessarily unless it pertains to what we're doing or the conversation.
So this next question that I have is one that I like to ask all guests. So there's no right or wrong answers here, but I'm just curious to hear your thoughts on it.
Sure.
Having a smell disorder, do you self-identify as having a disability?
Yeah, that's a good question. When you're asking the mother of a child with dwarfism, which is technically a disability, who, you know, can swim a 500 meter freestyle. So I hate the word disability because I feel like, you know, looking at these kids, they're anything but disabled. So I don't necessarily identify as having a disability, but at the same time, I see how, for example, if my job depended on my being able to smell, which in some cases it does, and there's certain things that I have to get other people to check in with me on as far as work, but say I was a chef or a caregiver and I needed to be able to smell if somebody had a dirty diaper or if there was food burning, then yeah, I think in that context, I would consider it somewhat of a disability because it impacted my ability to earn a living.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been interesting for me, having had anosmia for such a long time at this point, having an infant now, he's almost 9 months old at this point, and dealing with diapers has been very, I don't know, interesting is the right word, but it's just, I'm so cautious and always double, triple checking him because I have to visually inspect versus doing a sniff test that many people can do. Okay. So I'm sure as he gets older, he's going to be like, why are you always undressing me and checking my bum? You know, so it's definitely more on him, I think, is an inconvenience that I'm always trying to see what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, had I been dealing with this in the context of parenting a young child, that would be really distressing to me.
It can be. Yeah, it can be at times. So what would you like people who don't have a smell disorder to know about what it's like dealing with it now that you've experienced both?
I think the biggest thing I would like people to know is, like everybody with all things that are painful and involve a loss, be willing to sit with somebody and listen and feel their pain with them. Because when, you know, and this has happened to me so many times, and even with, you know, the physicians in my practice, I've tried to teach them not to do this. You know, we're such a pain adverse society and we expect everything to be fixable and more uncomfortable, you know, with just being with anybody suffering. And I just feel like it's a huge slap in the face when somebody says something like, oh, well, you know, you should be grateful you didn't lose a leg.
Mm.
Or you should be grateful it's not cancer. And, you know, quite frankly, when this happened to me, I kept thinking, I know a lot of people that have lost a leg that are doing all the things I'd want to do just fine. I'd rather lose a leg, not to diminish their pain and suffering and the impact that that would have on somebody. But, you know, if I had the choice, I would rather have had that. So what I'd like everybody to know is listen more than talk, and don't dismiss and compare, because it's, you know, it's just like, if you were to tell me about the worst experience that you've ever had in your life, that was life altering and caused grief, and I turned around and said to you, well, you should be grateful that this didn't happen. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't help.
I do find it curious why we are quick to do like comparative ailments, to your point. Like when you, especially with having a smell disorder, it seems to be more prevalent that people are like, well, at least you didn't X, Y, and Z.
Right.
And I don't think we would do that necessarily if it was someone who had lost a limb or someone who had gone blind. You know, I don't think that it would be as socially acceptable. Not that it is socially acceptable, but it right. seems to be more people are comfortable with dismissing smell disorders.
Yeah. And that may be because it's not visible.
Hmm.
I think that's part of it. But, you know, I think a lot of it is we've become such a sort of self-absorbed, discomfort adverse culture that sometimes there's just not room.
Right.
You know, which is unfortunate.
Yeah. So my next question for you is really kind of any shout outs you have for things that you have coming next. So what kind of resources can people check out on your website? Do you have any programs coming up, or do you want to give any kind of shout outs for stuff that you're going to have coming shortly in the future?
Oh, sure. And thank you. Thank you for letting me do that. Yeah, a couple things. So on my website, there are several free resources that I think can help people get pointed in the right direction. And I have just launched a year-long series of courses where each one will be a four-week course and will cover a specific nutrition topic. So this month, the topic will be nutrition and immunity. And it will involve a nutrition lesson where I'm talking and going over information and showing visuals, and then about a 30-minute cooking demonstration. And then that will be free. And then for people that feel like they want the extra tools to help them implement what they learn in that lesson, I'm putting together a pretty modestly priced package where every week they'll get recipes, they'll get food guides, they will get grocery lists, pantry and kitchen guides, and several more videos with cooking demonstrations. And all of those will have my personal spin put on them that that are specific to people with smell and taste loss, so that they can be sure that things are going to taste good to them, be visually appealing, and give them tools to modify other things that might be in front of them as far as recipes and menus and things like that. So I am launching that. And I also have a menu planner out now that's pretty neat. It's digital and it's fully customizable, and it allows people to have some recipes that they can try. The way it comes to somebody in their inbox is it's got, I think, three to 5 days of breakfast, lunch, dinner, and a snack. And of course, you don't have to use it that way. I personally use it as a way to get new recipe ideas and try new things. And then typically I will go through and test the recipes and then modify them to make them more appealing to somebody with smell and taste loss if needed. And that is available on my website now as well.
That's great. That's really nice. So people can go and check those out. It's lostsmellgetwell.com. And then final question for you is, how can listeners connect with you on social media?
They can find me on Facebook. I have a Facebook group that's called Getting Well When You Can't Smell. There is a Facebook page as well with the same name. And then on Twitter and Instagram, I'm known as No-Nosed Foodie. So they can find me that way.
Awesome. And I'll make sure that I link to all of your different pages in the episode notes. So if anyone's listening and wants to get connected with you, make sure you check out those episode notes. Well, Mimi, thank you so much for coming on and sharing a little bit more about yourself. It was really lovely to speak with you, and you're a phenomenal resource for people who are going through dealing with a smell and taste disorder.
Thank you. And same to you.
Thank you so much. All right. Speak soon.
Take care.
Thanks to Mimi for coming on the podcast and sharing her story with us. On another note, News Channel 5, which is the local news station in Atlanta, featured Mimi for an article, and there's the video that goes along with it. So if you'd like to watch that, I've included it in the episode notes as well. If you're interested in learning more about her work, including the free resources that she mentioned, make sure to visit her website, which I'll link in the episode notes. She also mentioned that there are resources that are available for purchase, and Mimi does donate a portion of all proceeds that she makes to both Absent and Stana, so a big shout out to her for doing that. You can follow Mimi on social media at No-Nosed Foodie. The Smell and Taste Association of North America, or STANA, is the first patient organization focused on smell and taste disorders in the USA. To find out more, visit STANA's website online at www.thestana.org. STANA is an official 501c3 nonprofit, so any donations you make are tax deductible. We are still fundraising to help all of us who have smell and taste disorders, so if you are able to, any donations are very much appreciated, and you can find that donation information on the website. Check out the latest series of programming called STANA Live Sensory Insights on Instagram, where we interview people from the world of taste and smell. You can visit our Instagram page to view all of the previous interviews as well. If you have any questions or if you'd like to get involved, please visit the website or email us at info@thestana.org.